2 weeks ago, Graham started our season of prayer and shared with you a few books that he got about prayer. So being a woman of prayer, as Matt reckons I am, I do have a few books on prayer on my bookshelf and by my bedside table. So I thought I'd just share with you a few of my gems. And I've got three to start with that I would say are the three of the books that have brought me to the place of prayer I am today. Now, they're not the answer to everybody, but they are, for me, they are really, really important. And the first one is the tiddliest book I've got here. It's called The Practice of the Presence of God by Brother Lawrence. And Brother Lawrence was a monk that lived in the 1600s. And that is just fantastic. I can't recommend it enough. I'm going to read you a little bit from it later. The second book is, I think, the scariest book on prayer, but the most exciting book. You agree, Martin? Rhys Howells, Intercessor. And this is the autobiography of a guy, Rhys Howells, who God took on a journey of prayer. And it has profoundly changed me as I realised through this book that prayer is not simply about the words we say. It's not simply about what we ask God for. It's about our life, it's about our deeds, it's about our obedience more than anything else. And that's why it's really scary, because some of the things God asked Rhys to do, you quake at the flipping knees at the thought of it. And I'd love to have time to share a few of those stories, because they are really amazing what God does. So if you think you might want to be a little, you know, scared in your boots, but challenged and excited and moved on in your prayer life, that is brilliant. And the last one, Intercessory Prayer by Dutch Sheets, an American guy. Now, this book actually took me a year to read. And the reason it took me a year to read is not because I'm a slow reader. It's because I'd read a page. Sometimes I might manage two, or if I was really, really good, I managed three pages. And I was praying. And the book would just be by my side. And I'd be reading the next paragraph thinking, I have no idea what I've just read, because I was already kicked into prayer by the things he was saying, because he just sparked me, he stirred me. And as I was thinking, reading some of the things he said and the encouragements he said and the examples he gave, I was thinking of other people, some of you here, some not here, other people outside of Ashwood, situations that I knew about that just pushed me. And it took me a year, because I decided after I'd read a little bit of it, and I kept finding this happening to me, that I was not going to rush this job. I wanted this book to become sort of part of me and some of the things he said. So again, it's not a book for those who want a quick read, although it's very easy to read. But that's another one. And I'm on my second or third reading now, because in the season of prayer I've decided I need stirring again. So that's that one. Let me put those two down. Now, the next three are not on my top 10 of how much they've influenced me, but they're in my top 10 for good reads in terms of stirring you in prayer. This one, I know a few people have got this one, My Utmost for His Highest, Oswald Chambers. It's actually a daily reading. There's a little one verse to read and then a few thoughts he's got. But I'm just finding this really provoking and pushing and encouraging. And because it's only a little bit a day, I have to say I haven't read it all, even though my bookmark does say September the 17th. I don't read it every day, but I am trying to read the day it is rather than worrying, because they don't necessarily link together. But just to be stirred and whatever is great. This one is... I can't speak highly enough of this one. I picked this book up off the bookstall at Book Aid stall in Grapevine 1 year, because the title just grabbed me. When God Doesn't Answer Your Prayers. How many of us have been there? Asked that question, hassled God because asked him, we've done what we thought we should do. No taps. Well, this guy has a trauma. This book begins with a real trauma. And this book is him sort of talking you through how he dealt with the trauma and his reflections on it. And it is another life-changing book. So, and the last one, I've actually only read one chapter. but I have a gut feeling that this one's going to be good. And it's Your Kingdom Come by Daniel Kalender. And it's free. You can all have a copy, which is even better. It's little, it's easy to read, and it just starts off by the very beginning says, their years with the Master taught the disciples one thing about Jesus. He was a man of prayer. They didn't say, when he asked them what their request was, they didn't say, Lord, teach us to preach. They didn't say, Lord, teach us to cast out demons. They said, Lord, teach us to pray. And his book is about prayer. And as I say, I'm only one chapter in, but I already have an anticipation that it's going to be good. And Dave's read it and says it is good. And so if you want your copy, look in Ashford News, it tells you how to get your own free copy. So, book review over. And you can borrow any of those from me, as long as I'm not reading them. Like the intercessory prayer, tough. You can't have that one for another year, because it's probably going to take me another year to read it. But the others, I might lend you out, or I might get you another copy, because some of those I've got off the internet, second-hand books, so you don't have to pay loads for them. Anyway, to my morning. When Graham said, would I speak about prayer, I went, yes. And then he said, because that's what you do, or you're good at. And in the days after he said it, I questioned that on a number of occasions, quite profoundly, to the point when I nearly wanted to phone him up and say, no, I don't think I can do that, Graham. But I knew he'd tell me off, and I knew that a number of other people who are praying for me would slap me and chastise me greatly. So I went back to God and said, well, what do I do? What do I share? How do I talk about prayer in a realistic manner? And I've got loads and loads of thoughts, as you can imagine, those, particularly those who know me. But one thought keeps coming back to me about prayer. I'm going to share that in a minute. But before I do that, I'm going to ask Christine to come. Because we had a conversation this week. Well, two things. At the beginning of September, Graham asked you to write down what God had been doing with you over the previous few weeks. And Christine wrote something on a piece of paper. And we've then subsequently had a conversation. She's told me more about what was on her paper. And I just think it'd be exciting for you to hear a little snippet. And you have got to have a little snippet of time. But then just to encourage you, because when I talk about prayer, many of you know I do pray. And I think prayer is really important. And although I don't pray all the time, as Matt says, or I'm not... Yeah, we'll go with that in a minute. I don't feel like I pray all the time. You know, I am aware that perhaps I pray, or I find prayer perhaps easier than some people seem to find prayer. But Christine described herself this week, I think I'm right in this phrase, I'm an uncomfortable prayer. And that just got me excited. So here, from somebody who you'd not reckon's an expert prayer for the... CD, I'm not agreeing with that, to somebody who describes themselves as an uncomfortable prayer. So, Christine, tell us a little.
Yeah, I'm in a position at the moment where I'm finding that God's just put in lots of little light bulbs, or light in lots of little light bulbs. You know, the ones that twinkle a lot. There's just things that are coming to me. But that's been a journey. One of the light bulbs was, I think it was last week, when Graham talked about prayer being a second language, or being like a foreign language. Well, to me, prayer is very much a foreign language, and I struggle with foreign languages. But I'm married to somebody whose prayer is a first language and is very natural to him. He struggles at times, but it's very natural to him. So I sometimes find myself comparing, but not in a sort of belittling way in some ways, but comparing myself to him. Because anything happens, he'll pray. Anything happens, we'll pray about it. Let's pray about it. For me, it's sort of more of a chunter, 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 I don't know what to do about it sort of thing, and I get into a bit of a state. But he's been challenging me to speak out, because the other thing is that when I am praying, I tend to be very quiet, and I've decided some of that's historical. But I don't speak out. I don't speak out naturally when it's praying, and that's one of the things that makes prayer for me uncomfortable at times. But I've been thinking and pondering, as I've been about my business and been doing stuff, about why it is that we are so different. And one of the things that came to me is actually, if I'm having a problem with Dave, because that's who I'm married, that's the prayer I'm married to, I don't very often straight away find myself able to tell him what the problem is because I haven't got the words for it. It's not because I want to be nice to him. It's just that somehow I can't grasp exactly what it is. And it takes me 2 or 3 days of pondering while I'm driving and working and knitting and washing the pots and that sort of thing to actually get that light bulb moment when I think, that's what the problem is. Now I can tell him. And as I was thinking and pondering that, I was thinking, actually, if I relate to Dave in that way, you know, the man I'm married to, the man I'm very close to, and it takes me a while to actually get into words or find the words that I need to speak to him, then surely that's the way I'll relate to God as well. And it takes me time. It takes me time to ponder. I'm not what I would call a reflecting in that I sit in the chair and I read and reflect in that way, but I have to be doing while I'm reflecting. So I may be knitting, I may be gardening, I may be ironing, maybe cleaning out the chickens, I may be sorting things out on the rotor and at work, that sort of thing. But I'm often doing other things on with other people. And then I can sort of just take that time out and it'll be churning. It's not a worrying churning, but it's just pondering in my thoughts as I'm going about things. And I thought, if that's what I'm doing when I'm sorting out stuff with Dave, perhaps that's what I'm doing when I'm sorting stuff out with God. Because I'm the same person with my husband and with God. I'm going to relate to God in the same way that I relate to Dave and the people around me, because he's around me too. And these light bulbs are coming on, thinking, I know where I perhaps need to change and not worry quite so much about what I'm going to say before I say it, but at the same time, I can think, this is me. This is how I relate to my family, to my people around me. This is how I relate to God. And I am praying when I'm thinking, and I am praying when I'm pondering. It's just allowing God to churn things in different ways. And it's making a difference. I'm not there yet. It's a long journey, but the journey's happening, and I can see now far more where the journey is happening. And now I know that I'm speaking a foreign language, it makes a big difference because I can sit down and start and learn it as well.
Brilliant. Thank you, Christine. And she's seeing answers to her prayers, where maybe a while ago you might not have said that to me, might you? That's... So hold that thought, you uncomfortable prayers out there. It's not all about being an expert. It's not all about finding it easy. But as I had my 20 million thoughts, and I've got scraps of paper with all sorts of ideas and different plans that I went through, one thought kept appearing on every page. So that's where I'm starting. I really feel that I have one thing to say today. And if you want a Bible reference for it, it's James 4, verse 7 and 8, I think. And it says, so humble yourselves before God. Resist the devil and he will flee to God. Come close to God and God will come close to you. Another version says, draw near to God and he will draw near to you. And that is what I want you to go away with. Simple, easy. But it's not so easy to do all the time, is it? But the story I want to tell you, and some of you may have heard this, that just struck me so hard and is where I feel I should start. A guy called Lawrence Neeson, an American, was telling a story about when his baby daughter was born. She was born premature and she was in intensive care for a while and had various tests checking how she was doing. And one afternoon the doctors came and said, we need to monitor her heart. And so tonight we're going to put her on this monitor. And while she's on this monitor, we don't want you to hold your baby at all. So he's going, right, okay. So he made the decision. He sent his wife for a good sleep because he thought she wouldn't handle that. He thought, I can handle this, it's all right. But of course, you know, babies, particularly prem babies, I guess, and babies of all sorts cry. And as he sort of was facing this night of not being able to hold his daughter, he didn't know how he was going to cope. And the doctor came and sat at the monitor and said to him, the reason why we don't want you to hold your daughter is this, and it's really important you understand this. It's when you pick your daughter up and she snuggles into you, after a little while, her heartbeat begins to match your heartbeat. And so if we need to monitor her heartbeat, we need to check her heartbeat out. And if you hold her, what we'll end up doing is monitoring your heartbeat. And he and I are just so, I'm just so struck by that thought that our children, which is why, isn't it, when they're little particularly, but even as they get bigger, when they're feeling distressed, that's why your, you know, your shoulder, your chest, dad's tummy is the best place to be when you're that little, because you're just so close, you get in tune with the one who loves you the most. And I just came away from that with that thought in my head, and it's been, I've pondered it every day. And I've been saying to God, I want that relationship with you. For me, this season of prayer is about us putting ourselves in that place on God's chest, if you like. So close that my heartbeat beats with his, your heartbeat beats with his. Does that make some sense to you? It does, doesn't it? And there's a whole heap of things, and I don't know if I'm going to get through all the things that it struck me about that I can do to say why I think that's so important. But one of the reasons I would say I don't pray very much, I don't pray all the time, or I'm not a good prayer at times, is because I think, and I look back from the day I started to pray to today, what I end up focusing on far too quickly is what I'm not doing, what I'm not praying, what I haven't yet seen and therefore not praying. I mark myself by looking around the room and thinking, Matt's a great prayer. Oh, he's prayed that. I never thought of that. Dave, doesn't he pray with passion? I don't pray with the same passion. John, I haven't got that heart for praying for the world. And so I could go round and I could mark myself and go, well, I'm not this and I'm not that and I'm not the other and not, you know. And actually, God's not asked me to pray for the world like he's asked John to pray for the world. Now, that's not to say I shouldn't pray for the world or couldn't pray for the world, but that's not what God's asked me to do. Do you know what I mean? When I look at Dave and the passion he prays with, and I go, but I'm not Dave. Even if I pray with passion, the way I pray with passion would not be the same as Dave. And equally, any one of you, loud or quiet, you know, lots of words or not lots of words, if you expressed your prayer with passion, that would look very different all around the room, wouldn't it? And as Christine says, we've got to stop marking ourselves by other people. We've got to start looking and going, well, who am I? Who am I? And my personality creates the prayer I am. I can't be a prayer like anybody else in this room or anybody else in this world, because I'm not you. And I want to release you this morning. In fact, perhaps we could just pause. If you feel like you ought to pray like somebody else, or you've been like, I'm not a good prayer of that, would you like to just stand up and let's just pray, and let's just ask God to start work on you. Is that all right? Just stand up. Don't make a big deal. If you feel you mark yourself like me against what you're not doing, or you think you look at other people and go, I can't do it like them, I'm no good. Right, let's just pray. Father, for those that are standing, but also for those that are sitting that maybe will think this through afterwards and go, oh, actually, I think I fit into that. I just want to pray a releasing in the name of Jesus of those expectations that some we've put on ourselves, some have been put upon us by other people, some of the enemy activity that are just wanting to say to us, you can't do it. But God says you can. And we just want to release the I cans this morning, right across this building, right through Ashwood and beyond, so that where we touch other people, there can be I can pray, and I can pray well. I might have got more to do, I might have got further to go, but that's true for all of us. And I just want to bless these people in the name of Jesus. Amen. Thank you. Sit down. Anyway, this breathing pattern, get back to that, otherwise I'm going to never get to the end of my notes. As I was thinking about this, I remembered another person that I heard speaking, and I have no idea what she spoke about in the end, but a lady called Heidi Baker, who spoke at Grapevine one year, has got an incredible ministry, I think in Mozambique, I remember, and as she told her stories, you knew this was a woman of God who, I think, had got the heartbeat of God. But she came on the stage And bearing in mind, we'd been in the big top for an hour and a quarter maybe already. And this is what she did. Father, we love you. We worship and adore you. Glorify your name in all the earth. Apologies for my singing. I'm not as good as she was. But she did that. And my initial reaction was, oh, flipping out, we just worship for an hour. Kids are out. I've got to go and fetch the kids in a minute. Come on, I want to hear you speak. I'm just telling you how it is. I might be a great prayer in some people's eyes, but there's a little bit of unspiritualness in me still. And she just didn't sing it once. She sang for quite a long time. Which she probably did, because Caroline said, and everybody began to sing with her. You couldn't have not, actually, I think. It was a powerful moment. And then she went on to speak, and it was great, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But as I was thinking about this breathing, I suddenly realised what she was doing. She was getting her heart beating with the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. Now, it's taken me, I don't know how long, 10 years maybe, to have that little moment of revelation. But it made me think, as I was praying, that we're in danger of missing what God's saying to us if we're not careful, because we don't press in, we don't push in to where God's heart is beating. We'll go, quick cuddle, you know, quick, love you, God, and off we go. But I think this draw near to God and he will draw near to you is so important. It was interesting this week when we were praying, again, it was the day we were praying with the children, and we were all holding the names out in front of us. We stood in a circle, so all the names of the children were on our hands in front of us. And we prayed for a little while, and then Norman said, oh, it's hard work holding these names up, isn't it? And he said he'd tried this way, then he put them in that hand, and then he'd held them there, and then he was, you know, you can imagine, can't you? Because it is tiring, isn't it? And he said, I just wanted to give up. He said, but I knew that was the moment we needed to keep praying. And as he said it, we all went, yeah, we understand that. And then we went into more prayer for those kids that I felt was quite anointed, because we'd pressed through. We'd pushed through. We'd prayed our prayers, if you like. We'd said the things that we saw. But then it was like we caught a little glimpse of that heartbeat of God for our children and our young people. Now, I just think there's something there to get hold of. The Practice of the Presence of God, this Brother Lawrence book, has said it profoundly changed me. I was a teenager when I read this. And I just want to read you a little bit of this book. The essence of what Brother Lawrence is saying, he says, in everything you do, we should be in the presence of God. We should worship God at all times. Now, you might go, he's a monk, that's okay for him, he's got plenty of time for that. But actually, as you read his book, you realise that the daily tasks as a monk that he had to do actually caused him not to think about God. He talks a number of times about you have to stop when you're in the middle of something and take a moment to worship. And I go, surely in a monastery, there's not that much stuff going on that you have to sort of take time. Surely the things you're doing should enable you to be praying all the times. I perhaps need to go to a monastery or a nunnery or whatever and go and have a taste of it, because I don't know. But he just senses that there's this this ability to be in the presence of God all the time. And as I read this as a teenager, I guess I wasn't that, I wasn't under as much pressure as some of us perhaps feel like today. But it just caught me, and I said to God, I want to be in that place. And that is why I said this book is one of the most life-changing books I've ever read. Because that is why you all think I pray a lot. Because my heart is from the moment I get up in the morning to actually the moment I wake up in the next morning, that I am in the presence of God. Now that actually means, and I'm sorry to blow some of your bubbles away, I do not pray all the time. There's days when hardly a word comes out of my mouth in a prayer-like fashion that we might go, that was a prayer. But I pray all day. And again, I want to release some of you today to get into a place of, get out of thinking that praying is about what words you can put together and the getting the words right. And it's and I want to say it's not even about when you pray, however you pray, having the answers you want to see. It's about getting into that place of the heartbeat of God. And I want to say that every single one of you can become expert at that, just as I did. There's nothing unusual about me. There is nothing unusual about... Well, maybe there is. But, you know, you hear what I'm saying, don't you, as you laugh at me. You know, actually, I'm perhaps more unusual because I have caught something of that heartbeat of God. So perhaps there's a health warning on you all. But your unusualness will be quirky to you. You won't turn out like me, and you'll all be thankful for that when you get that heartbeat. Do you know what I mean? But you need to know that. You need to know that. So, I just want to read you a couple of bits. Let's see. The first benefit that the soul receives in the presence of God is that faith becomes more alive and more active in all the processes of our life. See, Christine said, now she's stopped trying to be something she's not. You're able to tune in and be you and discover what God's saying to you. That can happen to all of us. The practice of the presence of God, he says, makes us stronger in hope. Our hope grows in proportion to our knowledge and according as our faith penetrates. Sorry, this language is slight. This is the translation, this is the upgraded version, but it's still in older language. Anyway, the practice of the presence of God makes us strong in hope. By the practice of God's presence and this inner gaze, the soul becomes familiar with God in such a fashion that it passes almost all of its life into continual acts of love, worship, etc., etc., etc. Sorry, there's another bit I wanted to read and I haven't got that there. The most holy practice, he says, the nearest to daily life and the most essential for the spiritual life is the practice of the presence of God. That is, to find joy in his divine company and to make it a habit of life, speaking humbly, conversing lovingly with him at all times, every moment, without rule or restriction. It's a nice thought, isn't it? To find joy in his divine company. I wonder if you'd feel that. He talks about worship, and here's another little thought. He says, to worship God in truth is to recognise him for what he is and to recognise ourselves for what we are. To worship God in truth is to recognise that at this moment and in the spirit that God is what he is. That is to say, infinitely perfect, infinitely to be adored, infinitely removed from the evil, and thus with every attribute divine. No mention of singing, no mention of music, no mention of reading the Bible. It's simply recognizing God for who he is. So none of you can go, as I know some do. I don't find worship easy. I'm not a singer. I don't make, you know, singing doesn't make, help me worship. Worship needs to be something that we do as part of our daily life. But it's not about the singing. It's about us acknowledging and saying it, speaking it out. Oh, I've not went nowhere near any of my notes. Isn't it good? A favourite verse of mine that again goes back to my child, my teenage years. Psalm 27. And this became my prayer as a teenager. And actually still is my prayer. And it's this. The one thing I ask of the Lord, the thing I seek most, is to live in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, delighting in the Lord's perfections and meditating his temple. The version I know is to dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Help me out now. Oh, dear. To gaze upon the beauty of the Lord and to inquire in his temple. So do you know when you've got three or four different versions in your head, it's really hard to focus on one, isn't it? For that, to gaze upon the beauty of the Lord. Again, as I was reflecting on all this, I suddenly realised that actually that gazing on the beauty of the Lord is going back to that heartbeat, isn't it? Now, you're all going to do that in different ways. We haven't all got hours in the day where we can worship or pray or even just sit and gaze. It would be lovely, wouldn't it? Although I think most of us would, honestly, in all honesty, would get very bored. So how do we do that? Well, I've got just a couple of examples. Hannah's going to talk in a minute, but I just want to give you one other example. A number of years ago, on one Sunday morning, I found myself praying for Corrine. I have no recollection now of anything I prayed or why she'd asked for prayer, but I was praying for Corrine. And at the end of my prayer, Corrine laughed and she said, "It's like you've been with me the last fortnight." And I went, "Well, what's that all about?" I went home and I said, "God, what was that about?" Because as far as I was aware, as I went to pray because Corrine had asked for prayer. That's my memory of it. But when I actually sat down and reflected on what was going, God took me back over that fortnight and showed me how, on a number of occasions, I had lifted Corrine to God in prayer. Now, I have to tell you, as a woman of great prayer, this is how my prayers went as I look back. Oh, I wonder what Corrine's doing today. Bless her. Oh, Lord, be with Corrine today. Oh, I wonder what she's doing. Oh, Corrine. I have to say, that's as much as I could remember that I had prayed for Corrine. Now, does that give you lots of hope? Because if that's the expert prayer, if that's someone who prays all the time, you can all do that. It's not difficult. But what I realised in that moment was that because I've said I want to gaze on the beauty of the Lord, if you like, all the days of my life, I've sought to be praying at all times and to be in the presence of God, that I know, I've released my spirit to pray. And that every so often, my head gets to know about it and engages with it, and occasionally these little words of, "Bless Corrine, be with John, oh, Bev needs you, Lord." And I can honestly say, as this expert woman of prayer, that is often the extent of my prayers. And I often feel really, really bad, you know, when you go, "Oh, I'm so, so thankful you prayed for me." I look at my week and go, "Oh, if only they knew. If only they..." Well, you now know. But underneath that little word, my spirit is communing with God's spirit all the time. But I'm not aware of it. And I think there's many of you here who that is happening and you just don't know it. Does that make sense? Yes, Jonathan. Thank you. You've learnt well, Alison. And I I want to send you out of here into the rest of the season of prayers we've got planned now and beyond. Just get out of your head, I can't, I'm not, I'll never be, whatever it is that you say, and go, I can, and I will. But it takes a bit of exercising. A number of years ago, when I was doing a lot more praying, sort of more focused prayer, shall I put, than I perhaps feel like I do now, I would every so often sit down at my computer, and Graham would get an email that was me, I'm throwing my thoughts at the computer today, Graham, sort of. I can't remember quite how I worded it. I'll have to go back and have a look. But that was almost what I wrote at the top of my email. And it was, I would sit down and deliberately engage with what my spirit had been doing for the last week or a fortnight. Because every so often I become aware, like the Corrine. I go, oh God, I've got this little thought keeps coming back. What should I be praying? What am I praying? And I catch it. That's what I feel like. I catch what my spirit's doing. And poor old Graham used to get those thoughts thrown at him. Well, I don't have to do that now because I've learned better how I function, and I can catch those thoughts without having to write it down. But I think there's many, many, many of us that just need to release your spirit to get going. Stop worrying about what your head and your mouth do in terms of prayer, and be who you are, and then let your head, let your mouth catch up afterwards. Hannah, do you want to come and share? Hannah's going to share something slightly different, but I just wanted you to hear what's been happening to Hannah, because I just think it's another part of praying. And she's very nervous. So smile especially now.
Yeah, lots of smiles.
You have, because I'm here. No, just look attentive. Be encouraging.
Over this summer, I've been learning a lot about God's love for us and our identity in Christ. And there was a particular situation.
Go on. I'll hold it.
Okay.
You both.
There was a particular situation that I was in at one point at the start of the summer that meant I was isolated. I didn't know anyone that even spoke English, let alone understood me and actually cared. And I had a lot of labels put on me that were really negative, and I really needed some reassurance from God. So my prayers really weren't that spectacular at a time. I did
just like me.
Just boil down to, can you get me through this day? Get me out of here. I just want to go home. keep me in one piece. But he still managed to teach me through that. And he managed to speak to me about his love for me, and that he's our comfort and our hope. And he spoke to me through this woman that, even though I'd only just met, I ended up just like breaking down on her and telling her like everything that was happening. And she told me like 5 points that should give us hope in any situation. I'm going to share them. It's not really to do with prayer, but I think if you can.
It has everything to do with prayer.
I don't really understand this yet.
It's all right.
So.
Trust me.
It's more about like believing who you are to then be able to move on into the things that you're facing. So the first one that she made me say, as long as I agree with it, was Soy una oveja del Señor, and that's I am the Lord's sheep. And then the next one was Soy una hija de Dios, I am a daughter of God. And the next one was, Soy un sierva del Señor, I am a servant of the Lord. And the next one was, Soy la niña de los ojos de Dios, and I am the apple of God's eye. And that one really helped me to know that he could see everything that was going on. And he wasn't, like, I wasn't on my own in it, and he was there every step of the way. And the last one is, Soy una princesa de la promesa, and I'm a princess of the promise, and we're all like going to inherit his kingdom. And that's just such an amazing factor. If you can embrace all of those, then it makes you feel so ready to do anything. And I guess as those promises, I guess it does link in with prayer, because it means so much. So if we can really embrace those, that would be really good. And I guess it also taught me not just those things, but that we don't have to be good with words or say fancy things or amazing things or, I don't know, read loads of prayer books.
Not compulsory.
But God sees our heart and he meets with us, and like his power and glory is made perfect in our weakness at the end of the day. So we don't have to be amazing.
Yeah. Thank you, Hannah. See, I think what she went through was everything to do with prayer. Because there she was in a desperate place. And her prayers were not lengthy. They weren't... You didn't even really know what you were praying for, because it was that just calling out to God. And we've, you know, many of us have been in situations where our only prayer has been, help me, get me out of here. It's, you know, we've all been in that place, haven't we? Even if we haven't been in the same place as Hannah. But actually, I believe that what this lady brought to Hannah was that heartbeat of God that said, whatever's going on out there, you are mine. You're there. Do you know what I mean? And actually, Hannah's not shared all that she shared with me, but she's now in a different place of knowing who she is in Christ, because she's been that close to God. And I know that over this next year at university, and some of you might like to really stand in prayer with Hannah as she goes, that that is going to grow. I know it is, because I've seen it grow as I've talked with Hannah over the last year. And I just, she's caught something that maybe in a, you know, next year when she's back, she'll be talking to you about prayer, about the heartbeat of God. That's not a pressure or a promise. I've declared my expectation, because I think, you know, she's caught something.